This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Raph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. All right, Project. Welcome back to this week's after show. Now, one thing that can't help but be talked about first is F45 listed on the New York Stock Exchange. Obviously, massive milestone in the fitness industry for everyone that was watching. I can't tell you how many people sent me the message and the same article yesterday when it got announced. Even there's a video on the LinkedIn, on F45's LinkedIn. It might have been on the Instagram as well. I didn't check, but it was like the summary of the day. It was like them celebrating. Some of the speeches were in there. I think what's so interesting is how mixed the message. When you know their 45 story and you've heard it from so many different ways, and you know who started it and who founded it and how it grew, at least from first and second hand accounts, you realize that by the time it gets to the point where they're listening on the New York Stock Exchange, most of the information is wrong. It's just different. I mean, they had Adam Gilchrist as one of the founders. He didn't found F45. He came in much later, but now he's there. He's like he writes the narrative, right? It's like that saying, history is written by the winners, right? And at the end of the day, he pushed out the other two. They pushed out Luke. He pushed out Rob. So he's the last man standing from the original three. So yeah, I mean, all that aside, I think he's done a great job. Probably the biggest and most interesting thing about listings to me and people that buy shares is if you read the Australian AFR, the Australian Finance Review article, they have lost money they lost a lot of money in 2000, and maybe you can help me understand this. In the first quarter of 2021 or 2020, I can't remember what the article said, they made a revenue of $18 million USD in that first quarter, but they lost $35 million. How does that work? How can your revenues be $18 million but you lose $35 million? You're spending significantly more than the amount of money that you're making. How is that? Like, that math doesn't really make sense to me. I mean, it makes sense, but like,
plausible? It seems to me unlikely.
That's what they reported. That's what they reported. It's public information now, right?
Unless maybe they reported a loss for the year of $35 million.
No, it was the first quarter. That was the first quarter. Yeah. Because they said in the first quarter, and then they made a comparison to the year before when it was going well. There was like they made $25 million USD in the first quarter, and they only had a loss of like $700,000.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I mean, it's definitely possible. Huge companies do huge investments, right? Yeah. So it could be, hey, in the first quarter, we're making these like insane investments. I also assume there's a COVID aspect to this as well.
Definitely.
Where they could have, you know, but they might have expected double their revenue.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what happened to gyms. Gyms had losses like that, obviously on a smaller scale.
Yeah.
With COVID as well.
Yeah.
So obviously different things can happen, but it might not make that much difference to the value, because obviously insane success F45 has had, and people that are buying the stocks kind of looking at like, oh, what am I going to get out of this over the next 5 to 10 years?
Yeah.
They're not just like, oh, what happened in the last quarter? Obviously, that makes a difference and it makes fluctuations, but it might not make that much difference, COVID, to how much money F45 can make over the next 10 years.
So I got that actual clipping from the article. So it says, the first 3 months of 2021, F45 had a net loss of US $37 million on revenue of $18 million. So they produced $18 million of revenue and they lost $37. Why didn't you read this, bro? I'm fucking reading it out to you.
It's easier if I read it.
Compared with a loss of US $733,000 on US $25 million revenue during the same period last year, according to its filings. So in 2020, before the pandemic really kicked in the first quarter, they made $25 million. In the next year, they lost $7 million in that same quarter, but they reported a loss of $34 million more in the same quarter a year later, which is obviously COVID relates to that a lot. Investments, like you said.
They're also spending a fortune. Yeah.
They're spending a lot. But what I was most shocked about is it's not making a lot of money. Like the actual revenues of the company, I assume you multiply that number out by four, right? You get just under $100 million. For a company that listed at a valuation on the stock exchange of $2 billion, which is a multiple of 20x the revenue, which that makes no fucking sense in any world. And it just makes me realize that I think valuations and what companies actually do, And the whole story behind the future, the fitness industry and growth and stuff like that is largely what's tied to these outrageous valuations. Where if you took any stable industry that's been around for a long period of time and you had a lot of businesses been there for a while, you'd never get a valuation in a million years like that. No one would ever buy, you know, a large scale manufacturing public banana farm, you know, that, you know, been producing bananas for fucking who knows how long. And I don't know, maybe some global banana producing company that's got really stable profits, really good established industry, but it's like a really good reliable business. I don't know, maybe it's got $2 billion revenue. It's got $100 million profit a year. There's never going to get a 20x multiple. It's crazy. So there's so much wrapped up in the story of this new, exciting innovation, fitness industries, Mark Wahlberg, celebrities, that you can just get these absurd valuations that are completely disconnected from reality because, like you said, they're tied to the hopes of the future. I think that's what really a lot of people are betting on here. So that seems an outrageous valuation for that much revenue.
Yeah, and also, I'm not sure, but often it's also the like the growth of it, if it's going to go up really, really fast. I don't know if they're still getting the crazy growth, but it's possible. I think also fitness, like the total opportunity for the business is insane. You think about it, right? It's like, it's, you know, it's getting pretty big, but it's still like a drop in the ocean in America.
Mm.
How many more people could do F45 in America? Absolutely insane.
Yeah.
Right? Because if it's just Australia, you wouldn't get that.
Yeah.
You'd be like, oh, there's already a lot of these. But the total addressable market for something like in fitness is just, it's wild. Because there's so many people that still don't do fitness.
Yeah.
Nearly everybody
yeah.
actually isn't a member of a gym.
Yeah.
So I think that that is part of the reason. And yeah, a lot of fitness companies right now are having success because the whole industry is like, on the whole, insane on the rise.
Mm.
I don't think COVID stopped that in any way. But it's also probably cool to see someone or a company that's not just like a purely tech company. Like obviously people are...
Has tech components.
Well, yeah, tech components. But obviously people with money... who are making smart decisions here are betting on in-person gyms being successful in the future.
Yeah.
Like F45, I'm sure, will have a lot of revenue from non-in-person stuff, right? So maybe it's like online business or whatever. But their bread and butter is in-person franchise gyms, right? That is the bread and butter. So obviously people looking at this very carefully are thinking, oh, this is going to be around for the future.
Mm.
A lot of people working out in gyms, not just going to be working out at home on an app doing a Peloton race.
Yeah. And they're probably leveraging as well when they started FS8, which is that Pilates thing. Probably leveraged the future growth of that as well. It's like, okay, well, we've got whatever 1500 F45 studios globally, and we predict that 50% of them will add on an FS8, and an FS8 from this 15 that we launched are doing this much revenue. We predict can go XYZ. And so it's like, ah, you can pretty much, you know, add 500 gyms straight away to that. So yeah, there's lots of reasons for that valuation that I was thinking of in the exact point in time now. When you look at it, you're like, fuck, it's hard to imagine a 20x valuation on its revenue, but you
yeah,
just yeah. like yeah there's a lot of potential there, right?
A lot of potential.
Whereas the
banana, if they do what they did in Australia in America, done.
Yeah Whereas the banana farm example, like, that's pretty saturated. It's a really good business, probably at its peak, probably not going to get that valuation. It's like, okay, you're paying for this rocket ship that's about to take off. And everyone's looking towards the sky, and it's like, that thing's going to go to the moon. That's what people are betting on. They're betting on it going to the moon. It's you know, what'll be really interesting about the future of F45 is because it's existed in Australia for so long, and from the accounts that I hear from the very early initial F45 franchises, is very few of them are following the franchise rules very specifically now. They're kind of just all kind of innovating and doing their own thing. Like if you look at a McDonald's as the gold standard of franchises, you know, the McDonald's, how it operates in Australia, you know, Japan, US, Hong Kong, it's almost identical. You'd probably be only off by a couple of percent. Whereas in F45s, I think the brand is the strongest element, but the operationally, it's so different from franchise to franchise, which maybe that just shows how they've chosen to run it. They've given franchisees a bit more flexibility.
Yeah.
But I also think that there's just not a lot of strict guidance from the top down, and it's kind of just like whatever keeps the numbers up and whatever pays the bills for us. And people just need to figure out how their market is changing and adapting. They probably just can't do the same thing over and over again. They probably wash through a lot of their market if you've been in F45. But man, it will be interesting to see the future of how they go with, you know, such cluttered operations. And obviously I've had extensive conversations with the founder of FitStop. They've just taken on a massive investment as well, private investment. And their operations are far more consistent. But they're obviously, you know, a tenth of the size that, you know, even less. You know, they're a 15th, 20th of the size of F-45. So who knows? Who knows where it'll go? Who knows how they'll clean up operations? Who knows, you know, what innovation is to come? But they've got the backing of the public now, right? They've got the funds of the public, which is huge.
It's interesting as well that, because this is really from the CrossFit boom, F-45, and it's funny how I think it does happen pretty often where, like, obviously CrossFit started the whole thing, but F-45 has, I guess, been the most successful company to... other companies have done well, like Rogue and stuff, but, I mean, they've done better than CrossFit now.
So, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it depends how you describe it as better, but they obviously do more revenue than CrossFit by a long way. So
we don't know that, though.
I don't think CrossFit does $100 million.
But we don't know.
When I've looked online, it's like less than 15.
Less than 15?
Yeah. They've
at its peak?
Not at its peak, now.
No, okay. At its peak, I was talking about.
Yeah, I'm not sure what it was at its peak. But they have far less employees.
I thought it was like... what I heard was like $150 million at its peak. That's what I was hearing.
Not sure. It always gets confused because people often put like how much CrossFit gyms do, say F-45s in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's... I don't think it is now. I mean, they can still bring it back, right? Which would be great to see because they are like the originals, right?
Yeah.
In this, and probably most people would agree the methodology a bit more sound and a bit more of like...
In CrossFit.
Yeah, in CrossFit, I guess. Just a bit more...
Less mass appeal, though.
Yeah, it's obviously got less mass appeal. But the second mover clearly learnt from a lot of the mistakes, you know, of CrossFit and was able to ride a good thing, you know, potentially even better.
Yeah.
You would probably say on the whole as well that most F-45 gyms are much bigger businesses than the average CrossFit gym as well.
Yeah. I'd say what's interesting about the whole franchise, because, you know, people, I think what's confusing about... You got a F-45 headquarters, the company, and F-45, the brand. They're very separate things in many ways in terms of how the money is made. I think people understand this, but each individual location pays the headquarters, you know, their franchise fee, whatever the franchise fee, I don't know. But that is why the revenues are so low, because in order to get that number so high, you have to have, because that's their main revenue source, right, is a franchise fee. So in order to get, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, you've got to divide that number by whatever the franchise fee is, $20,000 a year or whatever, $15,000 a year. That's a lot of F-45s to get that sort of number. So when you know, when a company or when a franchise has 50 locations paying them $10,000 a year, look, I mean, obviously it's still a good amount of money, but it's not crazy revenues. I think that's what people forget is like because franchises have such a massive brand presence because there's so many locations and it's everywhere and they have so much marketing power, the actual money and revenue that they're bringing in and profit that they're making is still quite low for a long time. So it is an interesting model. But yeah, I agree that it has obviously been very successful. It has significantly less gyms than CrossFit. But yeah, I mean, you could argue in many respects it has done better, but...
I mean, what's so different, people don't realize, between F-45 and CrossFit is, you know, the average CrossFit gym will pay a $3,000 fee, obviously, to be a CrossFit gym, US, but you often won't spend any other money with CrossFit. You might send one of your coaches to do a course, spends an extra $1,000. So, like, your whole amount of money you'll spend with CrossFit in a year might be, you know, in that $3,000 to $5,000 range. But I think often an F-45 gym can spend over $50,000 with F-45 in a year.
Yeah.
Because obviously the actual franchise fee is exponentially more. They sell a bunch of other stuff. They take cuts on equipment. You're having to buy all that stuff from them. They sell, you know, marketing agency back to the F-45s. You can easily spend, gyms can spend $50,000 to $100,000 a year with F-45 compared to like $3,000 to $4,000 as a CrossFit gym owner.
Well, CrossFit could have got more, but they just didn't. They didn't go explore that path. Mm. It wasn't interesting to them, but it could change in the future. But what's interesting, I just kind of looked at a few different places estimating the valuation, not the valuation, the revenue of Rogue Fitness, because I would say Rogue is probably the biggest brand that came out of CrossFit as well. And most estimate it to be like $120, $150 million dollars a year. So Rogue has as big as, if not bigger, valuation.
Rogue is insane.
Yeah, than F-45. So you can put Rogue on that same level. But and Rogue is also now still independently owned. I don't know if it's taken on investment. So that's pretty crazy. And yeah, there's good margins on equipment, that's for sure. Okay, so anyway, interesting times.
And they are a great company as well. You amazing. Almost never hear a bad thing about Raiders. They're amazing. Definitely probably the best thing to come out of
Crosby. Operationally, they run far better than an F-45.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so successfully were able to shed any baggage with CrossFit as yep. well. You know, like, it's super cool in a powerlifting gym or strongman to use Rogue.
Rogue has yeah. done no so No one's like, oh, dude,
that's like a weak CrossFit brand. Yeah, no, yeah. They're like, no, it's like legit.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Rogue's an amazing company. I would love to speak to Bill one day, who built the company. It's just, yeah, they've simply an incredible company. Mm. But in terms of other, you know, fitness industry giants that have changed hands, I was listening to a podcast the other day with the new... He didn't buy the Olympia, but I think he owns part of it. So I think he was a key employee in the Mr. Olympia. And then when the new owners took over and bought the new Olympia, he like maybe got some shares or something. But the Mr. Olympia last year, or maybe the year before in 2019, was, which if you don't know, is the biggest, like the crowning bodybuilding show on earth. You know, if you win the Mr. Olympia, you have the best body on earth. I don't know, Arnold won it six times, for example. Everyone knows, like, you know, Ronnie Coleman, Phil Heath. But yeah, they just bought it. So it was owned by Joe and Ben Weider, which everyone knows, the Muscle and Fitness magazine guys. And then they sold it to, because they're really old now. Did Joe pass away? Or is he still alive?
No, he's dead. I think he's a long time dead. Yeah. Because they had the movie about him.
I don't know if he's a long time dead.
I think he's a long... Oh, I mean, like, not in the last 2 years. Like, yeah, I think it's quite a long time ago.
Well, 10 years ago or something? I think he was around, I think maybe in the last...
Yeah, 7 years ago.
Seven years ago, passed away?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before the movie.
Yeah, okay. And so then the American Media Group or something like that took it over, and it was quite corporate. But now a very passionate bodybuilding fan and a guy who's been around in the industry but is separate professionally. So I'm not sure what industry he works on. I think his name is Joe or Jack or something. Anyway, I can't remember his name, but he bought the Mr. Olympia. And he bought all the other stuff that comes with
and
it.
And you got
so,
no idea how much he paid
nah, for it. Like Muscle and Fitness magazine, all the media stuff that came to it. So he was just very passionate about the Olympia and taking it over and growing it and continuing to grow the sport. And what he actually brought in is, what was really interesting on this podcast, is he brought in a lot of celebrity with it as well. So like some of the other people that are now getting involved is like Shaquille O'Neal, Busta Rhymes, like some of the different rappers and celebrities and stuff. Because they're all...
Shaquille O'Neal could have been a bodybuilder.
Yeah. And Dr. Dre and stuff like that. So... What's interesting is they're bringing like the credibility, notoriety and other media, like other forms of media to, because obviously Shaq is very embedded in like ESPN and some of the other media and stuff, and he owns a lot of some of those companies. It's that they are trying to make this more mainstream. They're trying to bring the fitness industry more mainstream. And I actually didn't know this, but at one point they were going to put the Olympia on NBC, which is like a major television network, but at the last minute it got pulled. Like it was still on the NBC like TV schedule, and then like everyone tuned in and they like put on some antique car show instead.
Oh no.
So there was like, I don't know, some massive falling out, which they couldn't figure out why that was happening. Yeah, so anyway, I'm not really sure again what they paid for it, but man, it's interesting where they're going to take the sport. And obviously, yeah, like with the news channels, they're trying to get it back on TV shows, they're trying to get it back on major television networks and stuff. It'd be interesting. I mean, I think any time we're taking, that's obviously part of the podcast is what they're most excited for is bringing more bodybuilding to the mainstream. Look, there's only so far you can take certain aspects of the fitness industry into the mainstream. So the example would be, you know, CrossFit going on ESPN. There was only so many people that eventually, I mean, you're obviously tapping into a much wider pool of the mainstream, but there's still only so many people that are going to watch CrossFit, right? Same with the Olympia.
Well, a good example, I was looking at, I was thinking, oh, maybe he paid more for CrossFit because it's got the sport aspect to it. But it says online that Eric Rose, the new owner of CrossFit, only spent $200 million to buy CrossFit.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, like UFC is a sport, obviously it's way bigger, has such a high valuation, right, on the company. You've got to imagine partly because everybody knows that can be a sport lots of people want to watch. Whereas you look at CrossFit, it's not as ruthless as UFC, but you know straight away, like, this is a niche sport.
Yeah, and it's really only people that do the sport that watch it.
Yeah, whereas like everyone wants to watch a fight. Maybe not everybody, but a lot of people want to watch a fight.
A lot of people watch
it. Just a more like natural human thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, people understand a knockout.
Yeah, straight away you're like, oh, this dude's fighting someone. Oh, cool, I'll watch that.
Someone gets kicked in the head, knocked out.
I'll stop on the street to watch that.
Whereas CrossFit, the needs, like, what are they doing here? Why are they going up and down? What's this? Why is that hard?
You know, and fighting, I would watch almost anybody fight. Like, if I'm walking on the street and there's two kids are fighting, like, oh, I'll probably stop for this.
Yeah.
See what happens.
No, it's what, yeah.
Regardless of ability. Yeah. Whereas if I saw someone just doing bench and running intervals, terrible at it, I'm out of there.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, that's interesting. And then the same, I guess, thing applies here for bodybuilding. It's like, there's only so many people that are going to watch these freaks, like, get on stage in their G-strings and, like, flex their ass cheeks for points, right? So, I don't know.
And what I've noticed with bodybuilding is, even though they've brought in more divisions that are less freakish to try and bring in the mainstream, I just think they're not very interesting.
They're not.
Because it is a
unless
freak
you do that division.
Yeah, but it's a freak sport. Like, I don't think bringing in, like, just moderately sized bodybuilders brings in the mainstream. Because then people are just like, oh, well, this is just not that amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's one of those things as well where you have to really get into bodybuilding to, I guess, appreciate it more as well. So, again, it's like a participant sport. Yeah. That's, you know, makes it really appealing. I guess there were some divisions in the past, like when Arnold was around, it had more mainstream appeal. But yeah, I still think because of the level of where the physiques are at today, there is just there's just no appeal. And those...
Well, I mean, the physiques have been crazy for a long time.
Yeah.
It's not like in the 90s the physiques were small.
They've been crazy since the 80s.
They've been crazy for a super long time. I think partly as well is just, that was the only thing you could look at if you were into fitness then. So, like, you know, when I was getting into fitness, wasn't that interested really in bodybuilding, but, like, what else was I going to look at?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, just Ronnie Coleman's the man. Like, he's, like, the biggest lifter I can see. Whereas now there's so many more options. I think a lot of people are just a bit like, like, I'm actually not that into bodybuilding. I'm going to follow Strongest Man or CrossFit.
I still think bodybuilding is still the biggest sport in the fitness industry.
Yeah, probably.
Still the biggest part of the fitness industry.
But I guess I'm looking at, like, potentially why it's not growing like how it used to be. Because there are more options now if you're into fitness.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's just people have more options. So, the person that got into fitness before and they had two options. They had running or they had bodybuilding. You know, one crowd to go running, one crowd to go bodybuilding. But now there's so many other options. It's just not growing as fast. But I still think it's growing in terms of people uptake. Because people just want to look better, right?
I think definitely. I think they get most of their growth now, like Middle East, Asia.
Yeah.
Less so.
India.
Less so America and Australia.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, we've just had it way longer, right? And those countries, those athletes that compete on the stage, like, a lot of people look up to them still. Like, they're heroes, you know?
And I do think bodybuilding has got less aspirational for the Western world.
Like, I would say so.
Yeah, I don't think people these days are like that. You just want, like, the biggest dude is the coolest dude.
Yeah.
I think there is an aspect now of, like, the fittest person or the, you know, there's more to it.
Yeah, but yeah, you're right. In some of those other countries, those guys are like, they're idols.
Yeah,
like
the
people.
Best.
Yeah, people want to. People want to look like them.
Big Ramy, best dude in the country.
Yeah, so I mean, it'd be interesting to see where it goes. I was listening to Michael Pollan, who's the author of Omnivore's Dilemma. Is probably one of his more famous books, How to Change Your Mind, which is one of his recent ones, where he talked about all the current research on psychedelics. He's got a new book called Your Mind on Plants, and in the interview with Joe Rogan, he's obviously on a book promotional podcast tour at the moment. Isn't that so interesting that, like, they've obviously tied podcast audience to people that read books so closely? I guess audiobooks as well.
Podcast is like the number one way they promote books now.
Yeah. But anyway, he's on this and he's talking about this book called Your Mind on Plants. I don't know if you've... it's in our Audible library, so you can listen to it if you're interested. But he goes through all these different plants that and their impact on humans throughout kind of their history. But one of the more interesting ones was caffeine, right? So... in the 1600s, when caffeine first got introduced to the Western world, a lot of how people were hydrating back then was through alcohol, including children. The reason was because... because water sanitation was really bad.
I think I've heard this. Yeah.
A lot of people would get sick from water, right? So, people would drink alcohol because obviously alcohol is fermented and it's clean. It's not going to make them sick. So, a lot of people would just drink alcohol a day, which obviously is not good for the production of society, right? Most people are fucking depressed and... sloppy and not focused.
Well, what I heard was, there was a time where, like, most people were drunk.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
This is around this time, right?
When was it? It was like...
in the 1600s.
Yeah.
I don't know the exact date.
Great time. Great time to be alive.
Yeah. But then what happened was, then the caffeine revolution kicked in and people started drinking tea and coffee. And what ended up happening was now... like a hot drink where you boil water, which obviously got rid of a lot of the contaminants.
And caffeine is another plant, right? He's this is part of the plants.
Yeah, caffeine's a plant.
Yeah,
it's a bean, right? Yeah, so basically what was happening, because you don't just drink boiling water, right? That's just silly. Like, why would you just boil water and then just like, yeah, let it cool off and drink it? Like, people needed a reason to drink something, right? So they've now boiled this water and they're adding tea leaves or coffee beans to it. And what they see in terms of productivity, inventions, innovation, all different markers of human progress, it spikes around around the uptake of caffeine.
Going from the alcohol to the caffeine, so it's an upgrade.
Huge, right? Because, yeah, you're not only stopping drinking so much alcohol, but now you're drinking a focus, a stimulant, right? And it gives one example of there's this, where the coffee break came from, the term, the saying, take a coffee break. There was this factory in, I think I'm going to butcher this, I think it was Switzerland, and they were making scarves, like handmade scarves, embroidery. So it's like really detailed embroidery work. And they could only work, I think what happened was like all the skilled laborers went off to the war or something in like the First World War, and they were just left with whatever the labor force was left, and they were really slow, and they were producing significantly less scarves than what they were before, and they needed to produce as many more but with less people. And I think it was mostly women left over, and they said, well, look, just give us a coffee break, buy coffee for us, because I think coffee back then, it was more of a luxury. It's like, get coffee for us, we'll have a break, and then we'll keep going. And the production of the factory was like eightfold or something, right? Because they've gone from being able to work only maybe this 3 or 4 hour stint that's focused, and they get tired and production slows down, and now they're basically tripling, quadrupling their output. And anyway, it goes to give other different examples of how caffeine has improved, you know, human cognition and focus and output. And obviously, it's the most widely consumed drug in the world, and how much we rely on it. Interesting, in the average American diet, it's the number one source of antioxidants. Because
coffee, yeah.
That's more of a reflection on how bad the average American diet is. But obviously, again, how important caffeine is. And, you know, it really made me appreciate how, one, obviously, we take it for granted. Two, we're highly, highly dependent and addicted to it. But three, I don't think... And I'm being dead serious when I say this. I don't think I could have achieved anything close to what we've done in our life without caffeine. I mean, I think about it as such a powerful enhancement to what I do every day that almost without it, I just don't think I'd be able to do what I do. I wouldn't even come close. I think it'd be half of what I do. I think about all the times at uni, all the times at school, like the research, the up late. Man, running businesses, personal training, everything, focus. You know, I put so much of it down to focus and productivity that I just don't think it would be possible without it, to be honest.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. It's definitely the easiest and quickest upgrade that we know from a plant.
Yeah.
Insane.
Yeah.
And I mean, you can see the popularity of it speaks for itself.
Yeah. I don't trust people that don't like caffeine. I just don't do it. I just don't trust them. And I really think that caffeine is better when you've made it really habitual as well. So like, he uses example, he took like a 3-month fast off caffeine and he like really struggled with his productivity and his writing and stuff. But I was thinking about, and then he's talked about he would introduce it once a week on a Saturday, and his Saturday would be like crazy productive, right? He gets so much stuff done. And he said it was almost like in some ways, a psychedelic experience, because it would alter his consciousness so much and his thought patterns, and it would tweak him so heavily towards getting stuff done and productivity. And I want to do things and I want to move, right? That I think obviously that's one day out of 7 and then you go back down. Whereas I'd rather not have a giant peak and I'd rather have this consistent level of productivity and energy and innovation and focus rather than have this massive spike. Because that's some people that don't habitually drink caffeine, they don't appreciate it as much, I don't think, because they only use it very rarely when they want a boost in something. Whereas I think the real benefit for it is when you've had the long-term adaptation to it, it's habitual, you're having it every day and you get that slow spike that allows you to be productive for a long period of time and be focused for a period of time rather than this massive high and then this massive crash because your system's not used to it.
Yeah, I remember last time I had a break, I did really feel like it was very overrated the way people describe going off it. Because they, you know, people often are not fans, like, oh, well, it just, once you get used to it, it just brings you back to normal. You're like always below normal, and it's just bringing you back to normal. As you get off it, you're like always at the normal.
That's rubbish.
Well, I took a break and I can see some of the the benefits for it. Like, it's true, right? So when you first wake up in the morning, you would feel better if you never have caffeine, right? Than when you don't. Because when you're used to it, yeah, you're at that point where you...
withdrawal.
Yeah, it's been the longest since you've had it. So you do wake up a bit more dusty than when you just don't have any caffeine. You definitely wake up a bit better when you just never have it. But you do not start the day like you start the day with caffeine.
No way.
Even when you are addicted to it. And that's... well, for me, that was 100% the personal experience. You still just get into your day more slowly, right? Mm. And I'm not saying maybe people like that, but it's I think that is a myth that it's like, well, it just brings you back to normal once you're used to it. It's not the case. It's different. I would say probably the highs are still higher and the lows are probably still lower. And there's a bit more fluctuation in your day when you have been used to having compared to not having it at all. But I just found the whole experience a bit overrated.
Yeah,
I was like, oh, it's just... yeah, it's not like the natural energy thing. I just felt normal, you know? It was just... I just didn't have it in my life anymore. I brought it back in. I was like, oh, great. This is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I would highly encourage anyone who's not a regular consumer of caffeine to change.
I just didn't see like massive benefits from it.
There's only upside to drinking caffeine. I'm sorry. You can deal with some downside.
And there's definitely downside in, you know, as you have more and more, right? That's where it comes in. It's just like on a curve. But I have...
I'm not talking about drinking it all day.
And I see a lot of people go over that as well. Yeah, you know, they may not realize it, but they get into that stage where, okay, now, like, you know, you've gone from 100 milligrams, 150 milligrams to like 400 milligrams a day.
Yeah.
And it's now going backwards for you. But that
then the crash is worse. The withdrawal is worse. Yeah.
Really bad. And it comes on quicker.
Yeah.
As well, because you're getting withdrawals, like, even when you have caffeine in the system.
Yeah.
And it's tough. But in that first 0 to 200 milligrams, I think it's a reason it's so popular.
Yeah.
I mean, don't they say usually that they've found it in literally every society? Like, because there's obviously a lot of different ways you can get caffeine, but like, so I think it's so common. I don't think it's in every society, but I think it's so common they would find it. They find it in like Africa, they find it in like South America,
Egypt.
Yeah, and like, obviously they haven't spoken to each other.
Yeah.
They've just found a new way to get it.
Yeah. Just because I think it's so beneficial, it's so important, right? It's a critical ingredient to our evolution to where we are today. It's essential. We would not be here without caffeine. That's simply a fact. Whereas other drugs, you could simply, you know, like the opiates and stuff. Yeah, opiates, they obviously help with like surgeries and pain medication, definitely important. But you know, you wouldn't have doctors getting through, you know, the amount of study and research and studying plants like opiates and stuff without caffeine. And I feel like caffeine starts the process in the mind, and the rest follows. And there are plenty of drugs we can probably, you know, through human history, we could probably have gone without and probably still don't need. They're still useful, but nothing, I don't think, has changed the face of humanity like caffeine has. I think it's probably the
number one plant. It's pretty interesting. Yeah, I didn't really think about it.
It's a good book.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's worth picking out. It's interesting. So, last thing we'll do before we get to some of the listener questions today. So, I know you want to talk about this strong man. Is it a strong...
well, I don't know if you saw it, but it was it's the yearly World's Strongest Man.
Oh, it's happening at the moment.
It's finished.
Oh, it's finished. Who won?
It's finished. This bloke right there, Tom Stolman. So,
never heard of him.
Yeah, I never heard of him either going into it. The guy that won last year...
Jorgensen?
Nah, Pilkinson wasn't there. Shaw was there. The American came second.
Okay.
You know, absolutely massive.
Brian Shaw, yeah.
Yeah, Brian Shaw. Have you seen it? It was a good video online of him racing Ben Smith in
on a 100-meter row?
Yeah, in a row.
Yeah.
They were meant to do a CrossFit workout. It was like rowing and kettlebell swings, and then it got completely derailed into Tom Shaw setting the 100-meter world record, and he never even did the CrossFit workout. It's quite a good video. He comes second. This new guy, it's cool because he's Scottish, which is kind of cool because, you know, Scotland's like the home of strongman, sort of. But what's incredible about it, I thought was that he's only 27.
Wow.
And he has this like baby face. I was looking, I was like, he's so big, right? So you're like, how old is this guy? Like, he's only 27. And
Tom Stolman.
I mean, just to get to that size and to get to that strength by that age, obviously it's like performance enhancing. Everybody is at that level. But just like, you know.
Oh, I've seen this guy before.
Man, you know, he's had to build his body to, you know, 350 kilo squats and 400 kilo deadlifts, like, and that obviously just takes time. Yeah. I assume this dude started when he was like five years old.
He's not even fat.
No, he's in pretty good shape.
Like, he's got full six pack.
I think he's very tall though, because I think he still weighs like 160, 170 plus.
This guy actually has like if you look at Eddie Hall's body, you're like, not in a million years. Like, giant fat ass gut.
He's probably got a foot on Eddie Hall though.
Yeah, I know. Height, yeah. Yeah, yeah. But I mean, like, this guy has it, like, he looks good. He's like really well proportioned.
He's an absolute beast.
Yeah. Yeah, like, he doesn't have a gut.
And he's the type of guy...
he doesn't have a photo.
He's probably his off-season. He's the type of guy that, you know, you could imagine being at the top for like the next decade.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he's probably got nearly a decade less than every competitor around him.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the strongman age is like quite late. It's like late, 35 plus.
It takes time to get that strong.
Time, yeah.
You can just imagine how much his lifts must have been going up every year.
How good his genetics are. Yeah. What kind of steroids you got in Scotland? Yeah, that's pretty impressive. Man, I wish I watched it. It's still a great competition. Is it still on ESPN?
Oh, yeah. Still doing the rounds. I knew it because I forgot about it. Like I said, all the distraction of what's been happening. But then some of the members were coming in like, dude, we've been carrying the dead ball all wrong. I watched World's Strongest Man this week. I think you meant to put it on your shoulder. I saw it. And I was like, oh, fuck, Strongman is back on.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'll need to watch it. It is a good event. Last thing I'll say is, so obviously off the back of the controversy with McGregor and snapping his shin, that horrific accident, started going down the rabbit hole of trying to find out what happened. And there was an interview with his coach, and they were obviously talking about the leg break and the event. But I thought it was interesting, and I've heard this theme a few different times. They brought like a, I guess, some kind of theme or, I'm not sure how you say, maybe a credo towards the training camp. In the same way that in The Last Dance, for the Michael Jordan documentary, The Last Dance, so obviously the name of the show, but it's also the theme of what they called their final season, right? They called it The Last Dance, and that was kind of the focus through the thing. So McGregor brought something similar into that, into his camp, his coach did, and it was 24-hour goals. And what 24-hour goals is, and I don't know where he got this idea from, but I really liked it, was because McGregor's obviously got so much going on outside of the cage, you know, all his investments, all his businesses, people want his time, what's he going to do after, who's the next fight, it can become a massive distraction. And I don't think that's been obviously a huge talking point and contention with McGregor, and what he does is like, oh, well, how can a fighter that is so distracted outside the ring ever compete with guys who it's their sole and only focus? And it's obviously a valid point. And the idea of this 24-hour goals was, we only focus on 24 hours at a time. We don't worry about what's happening in 2 weeks, in a week. Instead, what are our 24-hour goals? We wake up. What do we have to achieve in the next 24 hours? Cool, whatever it is. Two workouts, ice bath, saunas, you know, eat all these meals, that sort of thing. And he said what was so great about it is it just really kept anything that wasn't important for that day and what he had to do in that moment out of his mind. I think that's so critical when you're preparing for such an intense event like that. And I think it's a great principle to carry across. You know, I was thinking even in what we do is, yeah, sometimes you can get so far, at least I can get so far ahead that I kind of miss what has to get done in a 24-hour period. And what we're reviewing today, the app we're reviewing today, will be a great kind of segue into 24-hour goals. But I think that that's where people get a bit lost sometimes, is that you forget that you can only move 1 second, 1 minute, 1 hour at a time. And really, you don't want to look too far beyond what you can do in that 24 hours, because it can become a distraction on what you need to do today. And I just thought it was a great concept in terms of 24-hour goals. And in the interview, it was like the same thing. You know, he's broken his... Oh, this thing's just after he broke his leg. And it was before McGregor went into surgery. He was doing this interview. And they're like, oh, what's next? You know, the fight. He's like, 24-hour goals. What are we going to do in the next 24 hours? He's got to go on for surgery. He's got to put like a message on social media. He's got to see his family. He's got to do this, got to do that. And he's like, that's it. That's all we're thinking about for the next 24. And then 24 hours after that, we'll focus on the next thing. And then 24 hours after that. And so I think it's a good thing because, you know, really at the end of the day, you know, this new lockdown has shown us that you can't actually predict what's coming next. You can't predict what's happening in 2 weeks. You can't predict what's happening in a week. You have no idea where you're going to be. You probably have an idea. It's probably a very high probability you'll be doing X, Y, Z, but you don't actually know for sure. And so that sometimes getting that focus on that 24-hour goals is, I think, pretty powerful.
Yeah, I had one this week like that as well, where I had a client and he's like pumped up. He's like, oh, I'm going to do this new diet. We're going to do it for 90 days, like starting today. And I'm like, it's not 90 days. It's just today.
Yeah.
Let's just do it today. Because you can't die for 90 days. You only really die for a day. And it's funny because there are so many time increments that you can, you know, kind of break up your life in. You're like, oh, it's like 1 year at a time, 1 month at a time, 1 minute at a time. But something which I think is something special about day. Because you could say, oh, dude, you only do 1 hour at a time. Let's do 1 hour. But I think for whatever reason, you could do week, day is always the most successful. Something about a day, obviously everybody has a day. Everybody also got a week. They're all kind of made up. But there's something around the day that it's just, it seems like that really does feel like how you live your life.
Yeah.
You really do seem to live it one day at a time in your mind.
Yeah. I just think also with the day concept is there's, it's always one of those things where you can actually get more in than you expect. I think that's probably one of the biggest lessons, at least 75 Hard taught us, is like everyone's perception of a day and what can get done in a day is different. So we know there's the 24-hour limitation. We know there's the sleep limitation. And so whatever's left, you know, the 16 hours you have to work with, everyone's perception of what can get done in that based off their own internal, you know, dialogue plus their, you know, collective experiences with, you know, people they've interacted with in their life or whatever media they've consumed or content they've consumed and whatever people network that they surround themselves with gives you a certain belief, right? Everyone has a different belief of what can get done in 24 hours. And I think that your whole life is about optimizing that 24-hour window to change it over and over again and make you go, oh, wow, I can actually get more done here than I expected. And that's really what 75 Hard program taught us, is maybe we're not doing as much as what we did in that time, but it shows you, okay, this is actually more where the limit is. And maybe there's a new limit beyond that. But I think that's the magic of 24 hours is there's actually way more than people think. And that, I think that's what's special about it. I didn't go very fast. Okay, so I'm going to dive into some listener questions. Before we do, we actually just finished an interview with the founder of Whoop, Will Ahmed, which will be coming out soon. We are transitioning the In The Black show, which is our fitness business podcast, over to a new podcast channel. That will be called In The Black Fitness Business Podcast. That'll be in the business category on iTunes and Spotify. We will keep posting them here for the next, you know, however long, probably next 2 months. But if you are interested in that show, go over, follow it, subscribe, because the new content will be coming out on that show there. So, and eventually we'll delete all the content off this channel and move it over to that channel. So those of you that are PTs, coaches, in the fitness industry, some capacity that are interested in that show and love that show, that is where you'll be able to find that in the future. But for now, you don't have to change, but at least follow it on Instagram, follow it on Spotify as well. So anyway, we're speaking to Will on that show, and man, I think what Whoop are doing and the money they're investing and how the company's going, you know, it's up to 500 employees. You know, they're a company that they realize that the more data they have, the more people they have using Whoop. And now, I don't actually know the number. We didn't talk about it, but I assume it's like getting close to 1 million people using Whoop. The more accurate it becomes, and so much of the third-party research and comparison to other wearables and comparison to gold standard industry medical equipment is just showing that Whoop is more and more accurate every day. And so I really think, you know, their mission is to improve human performance or unlock human performance. I think they're really doing that. I mean, people are literally changing without even consciously doing it, I would say, like just by opening the app and wearing it and committing to what a Whoop means, they're sleeping more, right? They're decreasing their resting heart rate. They're increasing their HRV, which are both measures of physical performance. So Whoop's one of those things where you might feel like you don't need it, but you put it on your wrist and changes happen, and it's guaranteed. I mean, it's what the data shows us. So think if you're looking for some accountability, if you're looking for some change, if you're looking to mix things up and improve what you do, you probably already think you're pretty good. But I'm telling you, Whoop takes you to another level. And you can join the My Muscle Project Whoop leaderboard as well. It's a pretty competitive leaderboard, but definitely
extremely competitive.
But it's worth getting on there. Again, you can find all the Whoop products at the mymuscleproject.com/whoop. That's WHOOP. And you can find that out there. All right, listen to questions.
Okay, this question is from Charlie. And so he said, due to good old-fashioned peer pressure, he does functional training without all the high-risk movements. And he would ask, how would you tackle this problem? He is signed up for a partner CrossFit local comp in 4 months' time. He tried to do some pull-ups and toaster bar for the first time in a very long time, and unsurprisingly, it completely messed me up. For context, not looking to win, just want to have a good time and not come last and not get injured.
Well, I think when he says it completely messed him up, I think he means like it made him really sore. Yeah, I mean, really the movements that you just haven't done in a long time are just always going to make you sore, regardless of if it's, you know, CrossFit or a new sport or running or whatever it is. Like, if you just haven't done it in a while, it's going to make you sore. So what I would suggest is in the kind of 2 weeks leading up to it, might be too late now, but with anything like that.
No, I said it's in 4 months' time.
Oh, 4 months' time, sorry. Yeah, and I'd start bringing those movements back maybe once a week or twice a week into your program. And it doesn't have to be much, just like a 10-minute EMOM or whatever, just to get your tissues, your connective tissues, your tendons, you're used to it. I think probably the thing that will not help you achieve your goal of being injury-free is going into it, avoiding them altogether, and then just doing them all in one go. So you need to slowly, slowly build them back into your program. And then in the 2 weeks, really start kind of going very sports-specific. So just doing mostly CrossFit so that when you get there, one, mentally, it doesn't feel foreign. Like moving the bar or moving your body weight like that doesn't feel foreign. It's not as tiring because like mental fatigue is a big part of fatigue as well. But two, yeah, your joints, your structures are used to it. They can take it and you won't be as sore, especially if it's a, it sounds like a 1 day comp, but if it's a 2 day comp, it's going to be especially helpful.
Yeah. And that's something I realized later is that you basically just need really small doses of anything if you want to be ready to do it down the line, as long as you stay healthy and fit.
Mm.
We used to have a thing that, you know, I could like never really do GHD sit-ups without just like cranking my back. But we were always like, oh, well, you know, they do turn up at competitions, whatever. So we'll just do it like once a month,
mm.
or even once every few weeks. And that's enough. If you never did it, it was absolutely awful.
Yeah.
Right? Absolutely awful if you ever had to do them. But if you just did them like once a month, once every few weeks, I still train my abs, still train my hip flexors, other stuff. So they're in shape. But just that small dose is really enough, yeah. you know, to keep ready. It's often less than people think if you take good care of yourself. Same as running. It's like, if you just like want to be able to do running, if you just ran once every few weeks and you maintained it, you'd be pretty good. You could probably run and jump into running anytime. You run no times in a whole year, it's going to be a disaster. Mm. It's going to be an absolute disaster. Mm. And it's not that much difference. It might be 15 runs over 12 months. And it can be similar with CrossFit movements as well. You don't need to sign up to a CrossFit gym. But you can touch on those, you know, five or six movements that you don't have in your program once a week,
mm.
once every 3 weeks, and it'd probably be enough.
Mm. Yeah, I'd be interested, like, if I always thought how I would run the marathon, because it's always been a bucket list thing for me, right, to marathon. But how I always thought I would do it is I would just be, like, really fit, just doing all kinds of random stuff, running here and there, but, like, no running program or whatever. Oh, let's go down the park, do a run. Yeah, do some WODs. You know, get on the bike, whatever. And then one day I'd be like, you know, fuck, I'm doing a marathon this weekend. I'd just like jump in and do the marathon. That's how I always thought I would run the marathon.
That's how I think you'll run like your next one.
Right.
I know you think, oh, I'll never do one again, but that's fine. But it's, I think that's a very common thing is you train for the first one because you don't know what it takes and you want to make sure you can do it.
Yeah.
It's like, if you just do that, you have no clue if you can do it. But then once you do it once and, you know, maybe it's not your sport, so you're not just like always trying to get better times, then it's like, oh, cool. Can I just do this on a whim now?
Mm.
That's like a level of fitness maybe I could do. And that's like, it's a different challenge.
Yeah.
That's a cool challenge still.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, because yeah, I think when it got down to it, I'm like, fuck, if I'm going to do this, I want to like actually get a good time.
Yeah, you want to do it properly.
Yeah. But then I always thought, yeah, that's how I would do it. But I knew that if you went and did something like that, it would be the crippling sort. Like you can do it, right? You can do it on the day. Crippling. Like just like you can do this comp, but you know, I could end up with a torn meniscus at the end of it or, you know, like a torn calf or something or like an injured hamstring.
You just be so sore that you're just not doing anything for 10, 12 days.
Which is miserable.
Yeah.
It's just not worth it. But, you know, same logic applies here. All right, next question.
Okay, this is Oliver McLean. Could you do a podcast? So you posted a photo of L-theanine.
Yeah.
Like some context here. Could you do a podcast on these types of herbal supplements? I've been hearing heaps of hype about them. Stuff like ashwagandha and most the stuff in Chemist Warehouse.
Well, there's a lot of stuff in Chemist Warehouse.
No, it's like a, yeah, I guess it's a chemist store.
It's a pharmacy.
Like, yeah, the pharmacy has every single type. It's like a Walmart pharmacy in Australia.
Yeah. They call it a category killer. It's like Easy Mart or 7-Eleven. It's like basically the only pharmacy you can buy stuff from. But, I mean, it wasn't a very specific question. I think, obviously, you mentioned there's the photo of L-theanine. We can talk about that. You mentioned ashwagandha. We can talk about that as well. We have talked about some herbal supplements previously on the podcast as well. Some of the, we actually did an interview with Mason from Mason's Mushrooms. I think that's what it's called.
Yeah.
Oh no, Superfeast. Superfeast is the brand. Mason is the founder. So go listen to that if you're interested in herbal supplements and stuff. It's a really interesting podcast. Mason, can't remember his last name. That was a really interesting conversation. But in terms of L-theanine is an amino acid. And what it does, it basically helps to... It's in neurogum as well. What it does, it helps... It's in peak.
Mm.
It's in peak?
Yeah.
Yeah, in rest?
It's in... So, you're not legally not allowed to put it in food in Australia. You can have it in... Like, you had a powder.
Powder. Right?
But it's naturally in green tea. So, you can add green tea extract and it has in it that.
Right. Yeah. So, what it does, and tell me if I get this wrong, Raph, because you've researched it more, but it just helps to level out the spike of caffeine. So, with caffeine, when you drink it, especially with coffee, you get quite a large spike in terms of feeling really high and then you obviously get a bit of a crash. But L-theanine helps to level out. So, your peak is not as high and it comes on smoother and it comes off smoother. So, it's less aggressive, but... You still get a lot of the benefits of caffeine. And L-theanine is like a leveler.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it sort of brings you down. So you can have it without caffeine in the evenings, right? And it just does the same thing. But people suspect it's one of the reasons. Like green tea is very popular with people that don't do that well with coffee.
Yeah.
Because it's already got that L-theanine. In there. It's already got the L-theanine. So it's like, it's meant to be smoother.
Yeah. I really like
less
the effect.
Of a peak. Yeah, and less of a trough, I guess, as well, because you're having less of a peak. So it's cool. I reckon of all these types of things, you obviously, it's different to caffeine. So if you're going in there expecting some crazy effect, you're not going to get it with this type of stuff. But I think usually L-theanine, people say, is the thing people are like, oh, I actually noticed the difference.
Oh, yeah.
Of nearly all of them. Because it's a more subtle effect than like comparing it to caffeine or alcohol. It's not. If you're expecting that, it's not going to be like that.
No. And the... And I would say, to speak to the L-theanine again, is that when you go for your, well, at least for me, when I go for my second cup of coffee, that's usually when I'll take L-theanine, because that's when I feel like I'm at most risk of getting too high and then having a hard crash.
Yeah.
And so generally, that's where I'll use it. My first coffee, I always feel really good and I'm fine. It never appeals to me to have L-theanine. But if I'm going for a second one, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to this for some energy here. Some focus, but I don't want to crash. And yeah. Then L-theanine is a great way to mix in. Basically, how I do it is I just put a bit of hot water in a cup, maybe like a third of the cup, put it in, just mix it in. I'll just scull it down. If I mix L-theanine in coffee, it usually tastes pretty bad.
Yeah.
So I just try and get L-theanine down into my system.
Yeah, it's gross.
Yeah.
It's absolutely, the powder is gross. I think that I put into two categories, because you're either taking caffeine for physical energy, or like, you know, some sort of physical movement, or mental.
Mm.
And I think it's great for mental. And I think it's worse for physical.
Mm.
Physical, you want to be firing on all cylinders. You're trying to get your best time in a workout. Having L-theanine, I just don't think it's making it better. You could be like, oh, maybe like if it's archery, it's the sport. But if you're going in to train or get going in the morning, I think it makes it worse. But if it's more like in the day and you're just like sitting and working, I think it's probably better for most people.
I'd agree with that. Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, before we dive into our review, we're going to review an app today, which I'm excited for. Most of you guys, we've talked about this before, you obviously have some kind of, either in your living room, either in your office, maybe your home gym, maybe at the gym that you train at, there's some kind of mobility gear. I mean, we've talked about HyperIce before. You might have some of the guns, some of the more tech-heavy, innovative products, but a lot of people just have some basic stuff, right? They have a yoga block, they have a ball, they have a foam roller. And 95% of the time, I see these products in those areas I talked about, they're pretty shit. Like, they're a crap color, they look old and worn out, they're kind of deformed. They just don't look very nice. And maybe people don't care. Maybe you don't care about how your living room aesthetic looks. Maybe you don't care about how your home gym or your gym looks, and maybe that's your favorite foam roller. Maybe you had it for 7 years, but
nah, if you have a blue foam roller, it's an embarrassment.
But maybe embarrassment. I was gonna say, maybe you're different. Maybe you actually care about the aesthetic of those areas. If you're like me, if you're like Raph, we care tremendously about the aesthetic of our gyms, about our living rooms, home gyms. We want to improve these areas, and no company has really done this as well as Blackroll. So if you guys are looking for new mobility gear of the basics, the essentials, they've got mats as well. They've got loads of stuff, but really, some of their core products, they just do extremely well. They look really premium. They're super lightweight. There's German engineering there. So somehow they've created this foam, which is as light as a feather, but as dense as rock. So you're getting, you know, the best of both worlds there. Great for travel, great for moving around, great for all shapes and sizes, and stuff that is fully recyclable. So if it ever reaches that point where you feel like you want to get rid of it, you can recycle it. Whereas most of the other foam rollers, they go to landfill and they get chopped up,
But what I'd say is, I mean, I haven't had it that long, but they do not age.
No.
Like, because they're so hard, they don't get that, like, imprint.
Yeah.
That other rollers get.
They don't lose their shape.
No, it's just exactly as how we bought it.
Yeah, and they're great products. They blend in really nicely. They look super premium. So, a great company. If you guys want to check them out at themindmuscleproject.com/blackroll is where you can check out the whole list of their products and go through their whole catalog. They've got some really cool stuff in there as well. Okay, so I'm excited for this one because I think that we're in this position now where, having finished 75 hard, there's a lot of momentum that and a lot of habits that you want to keep, but 75 hard is not necessarily the framework and the structure you want to keep it in. But what I really enjoyed about the program was waking up every day having a list that I have to tick off. Now, it's one thing to have a written list. You know, you can write your list out every day, but I think it's another thing to have it in an app, because the app can do so many things that, you know, a written list can't. You know, an app can keep an ongoing tally of well, in this particular app, an ongoing tally of like how long your streak has been. And you know, we've critiqued streaks before, but I think it's still useful as well. It can also, you can change the different days you want to put it on. So, you know, I only want this habit on, you know, Monday to Friday. I don't want it on Saturdays and Sundays. You can keep a tally for when those, you know, if it's like, hey, I want to do 5 posts, you know, 5 Instagram stories today, you can add the tally up before you cross the whole thing off. So you can go, oh, okay, I've done 3 out of 5 today. Cool, I've got 2 to go. So it's
just... That was my go-to for the water.
Yeah, liters.
I was doing 0.5 liters.
Yeah, okay. So you
had
to...
I had 8.
Yeah, okay. You had to tick it off.
Sometimes it was like, boom, tick.
Yeah, yeah. Lots of ticks. But yeah, and having that flexibility in the app, having that list every day, that those reminders in there, I think is super helpful. So this app is called Habit List. We don't have any association with this company. I don't know how you introduced me to them, Raph, but it's a great product. It's like $7 to buy the thing outright.
Definitely money well spent.
And it's just simple, right? It just does really well. I'm opening it every single day and... Man, it just looks like a note section in your phone. I think it's really good. I don't even know if I can, if there's maybe stuff I'm missing in there that I'm not doing to make it better, but I think it's...
I mean, it does nearly everything in there. I mean, it keeps streaks. You can do any days you want. You can do amount of stuff you want. It's pretty much everything you need. One cool one as well is you can even do, because I used to have a habit that was, like, it wasn't on specific days. It was just like every few days.
Mm.
So it just would come around.
Yeah.
You know, every occasionally doing the stuff like that only is on a Sunday is really helpful because you always forget about that stuff and then just having it there every single Sunday.
Yeah.
I'll give you a good example of how meaningful the stuff can be was that I got this first app years ago and one of the ones I put in there was speaking to my grandparents every few days.
Oh, yeah.
And that would come around and like that is the type of thing that before it, I could go a month without staying in touch with them. And then I got it and I like always take that one off and that was like, so it was every few days. You know, and that probably ended up being the last 2 years of their life. And you look back on it, you're like, oh, man, I'm really happy I had that in there.
Right.
Because otherwise, I might have spoken to them 4 times in the last 2 years. Instead, it was whatever it was, every 3 days. So it was a couple times a week.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think there's probably a lot of things like that in your life. You could think, oh, wow, this is like something I would love to not skip out on. It can be like productivity stuff or it can just be like, you know, just general family stuff as well.
Yeah.
And it's a good app for that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So like... I think what I encourage you guys, if you get an app like this, and I think this is a really good app, has everything you need, but don't go too aggressive at the start. I think what's disheartening about this app is if you know the colors start to change on you, that goes more red when you're not really following a habit.
You feel like a loser.
Yeah, and it's like you got a negative number, you're like, oh shit.
But it's a good wake up call sometimes when things have got crazy. Because what'll happen to me, I'll be like green, and then something will happen, right? Mm. And it'll be like a really kind of just everywhere 3 days. I look and like everything is red, and I know I'm like things have gone off the rails a little bit.
Exactly, and I think that's what it's good. It's your North Star in many ways. It's like okay, I've sat down, I've decided. I've written out this list very specifically of, again, 24-hour goals. At the end of this 24 hours, there will be loads of shit that happens. But as long as these things happen, I know I'm progressing towards the things that are important for me. Because that's what we forget, right? We forget to do the things in every 24-hour period that are progressing towards our long-term goals, right? Because you got to have the time where you set aside your plan and you go, okay, I want my life to turn out this way. At least you should. Or you want it to you know, I kind of want to live in this area. I want to have my family like this. I want to... you know, live in this sort of house or, you know, build this business to whatever your life wants to be, travel, learn music, whatever it might be. And I think if you don't spend the time doing that and you don't go, okay, if I'm going to have that goal, I need to pick up and read a book every day. I need to do this every day. I need to do that every day. Then you will not get there. You just simply won't get there. And this is the reminder that are you heading towards your North Star? Are you green? Yes, we're on track. Is your trajectory in the right position or... orange, red. No, I'm falling off track and to get back on track. Now, all I would encourage is I went very aggressive in this because I already had so many habits built from 75 hard. So the first 5 or 6 things on the list I was doing already anyway, reading, visualizations, cold showers, working out, that sort of stuff. So it's very easy to tick them off. But then I added some other ones in there. What I'd be careful with the new habits is just making sure that you don't put too much in there that you can't handle. Start small.
Well, I think it was perfect for me was, I can't remember now, but I'm pretty sure at the start, it's like you get some habits for free. I think you get like 1 to 3 for free.
What do you mean?
Like I think when I had the free version of the app.
Oh.
I don't know, maybe there's no free version now.
No.
Okay, when I originally got it was a free version. Oh, and you only have like 2. I was like, I'll save the money. I'll just use 2. And it was honestly, it was the best way.
Because
I still was struggling.
Right.
I kept not ticking them off.
Right.
And then I got really good at it too. I was like, okay, I'm paying for this.
Is this
app. I'm gonna get
pre 75 hard?
Oh, yeah, like years ago.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh, so you've had this app for a long time?
Yeah, more than 3 years.
Yeah, okay. No, it's a great app. All right, guys. Well, there you have it. I'm going to give this app a 5 out of 5. I don't think it can be any better. I think there's no feature on it that I'm like, oh, I wish it had this or I wish it had that.
It also, the reminders are really good. You can set individual habits to remind you different times of the day.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably the only thing it doesn't have is any media storage. So if you wanted to make a habit, like, for example, in 75, take a photo every day.
None of that.
It can't do that.
Yeah.
But you could just take a photo and then just tick it off in the thing. But it's not a storage app. So you're not going to be able to store stuff into it.
It's a cheap app.
Yeah. It's a cheap app. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's why I like it. It's simple.
Give it a 4.5 out of 5. There's some things it could do, but for what it needs, it does it all.
I think it does pretty much everything. Okay. So guys, there you have it. Habit List. That's just on every app store. I think you guys can find that. And yeah, it's really been, you know, life-changing in many ways. So lots of life-changing stuff on this today's show. Guys, remember, final reminder, if you are into the In The Black show, if you do like what we do there on the Fitness Business Show, we're changing that over to another channel in a few months. So we'll probably give it till the end of August, and then all the topics, all those shows, all the new ones will get posted on the new podcast show, In The Black Fitness Podcast. I'm pretty sure it's live in the store now, in Spotify, iTunes. When this comes out, you'll be able to find it. So if you just search for In The Black Fitness Business Podcast, I believe it's called, In The Black Fitness Business Podcast, you'll have us there. It's a new red logo, so you'll be able to see it. And follow it on Instagram. It's In The Black MMP on Instagram, so check it out there. Guys, as always, thank you so much for tuning in. If you love the show, leave us a review. Tell a friend. We always appreciate it, and we'll speak to you all next week. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themindmuscleproject.com/theaftershow. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.